Welcome, and thank you for standing by. We'd just like to remind participants that the conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much, operator. Okay, everybody, welcome to the next edition of our HSCLD call. It's Wednesday, April 21st, and we've got an interesting agenda today, but traditional to our usual agenda items, we'll start with roll call. We'll go over review amend agenda items. I think Mike Belage may want to significantly review or amend this agenda, so we'll talk about that in just a minute or two. And then we'll get to the major content. So with that, I'm going to take roll call. If you are on the call and you don't hear me call your name, please let me know. So I've got Joe St. Sauer, I've got Eric Brown, Dave Piscatello, Brian Cute, Mike Pelage, and John McElwain. Did I miss anyone? Okay, great. So before we move on, does anybody have any review or amend agenda concerns? I think, Mike, you expressed one or two, so maybe you want to talk about how we're going to modify. Yeah, okay, cool, thanks.
Exactly. So what we're going to do here, and again, I'll try to get through this as quickly as possible to let you get down to the dirty work and heavy lifting. But I think there are some sort of process questions, outstanding requests that we need to address. And again, the fact that we are trying to rearrange our work schedule to expedite things to meet DAG 4 was something that was done as, based upon a request from Kurt. And again, before we, the group, start changing that, I would like to have that in writing just from a procedural standpoint, because since we are deviating from our original schedule, I think we, from an administrative standpoint, we just need to document why we are deviating. Number two, getting back to, again, sort of the housekeeping of how we do frame this larger picture, you know, several months ago there were multiple requests of ICANN staff to produce the original document that Paul Toomey had sent to BITS that was part of the genesis of this, if you will, working group's original mandate. That still has not yet been provided. So those are the, I think, two things that, again, I've discussed, has been previously discussed, and, again, just want to bring this now and make this a more formal request, although some of the other requests have been, shall we say, more collegial or off record. I just want to put this on the record. The second thing I want to do is, you know, originally we were talking about trying to have some votes or at least frame the discussion of how to potentially move forward given this new expedited timeline that ICANN senior management has proposed to mandate upon us. And what I want to do before starting down that path is I feel that we have an obligation as a working group to take into account those comments that were submitted in connection with the group's first snapshot. And then the other thing I think we also need to talk about was we have represented to the community sort of another snapshot. So, again, I don't want to – those are two things I think I don't want to lose focus on. So with regard to the comments that were received, there was a limited number. There was a total of six that were submitted. So I guess my first question is, I've scanned through them. Has anyone else in the group gone through and reviewed those submissions? Okay. I will assume that that is a no. So the first one was submitted by, what is it, Dave Smiley here. And where is Dave from? So Dave actually was, his comments here, he was general, I would say positive to the concept of a security verification process. But again, he was talking about how this would be modeled upon a certification system such as a SysTrust or a WebTrust. Now, again, I think that raises a potential interesting question here, because this goes back to the age-old question of, are we going down through a certification or a potential report card here? So, again, I think that's something we definitely wanted to, try to be concerned with. And I thought this was also a rather interesting excerpt. I worry that ICANN staff may be drinking too much of its own Kool-Aid with respect to the role of DNS has in the overall Internet ecosystem. And he talks about how a seal, he talks about the limitations of a seal and how that would be appropriate. Steve Metallitz and John, perhaps, John, would you be able to speak to some of the concerns that the IPC has raised? I saw that Claudio had submitted some comments from Inta. Would you be able to perhaps summarize them? Because I think they are also consistent with Steve's comments as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I wasn't involved with Steve's comments, but I was involved with Inta's comments.
Okay, so you have the floor. Instead of me summarizing, I rather, you know, it's much better to come from the source. So if you could perhaps take some time right now and go through and articulate the concerns that of the IPC on this issue, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, let me pull it up. Let's see if I can find it.
Yeah, so it's in a little PDF here.
Yeah, okay. So let's see. The first comment, I guess, was on the report card concept. And the report card concept was seen as the self-reporting part. There wasn't a criticism really with the concept of a report card, but it was more with the self-reporting aspect to the report card. Particularly, and I found this, it's one of our discussion points today, there's some confusion amongst observers when we talk about mandatory versus voluntary as to whether we're saying it is mandatory for all registrars and registries, or whether it is mandatory for all registrants within a TLD that has been approved. So with respect to the report card concept, Inta felt that if it wasn't mandatory for all registrants to self-assess, and by the way, they had questions with the self-assessment, it just wouldn't be used. Just human nature would be, if you can think back to college, if we could take a pass-fail class, we all would do that, or if you could take an ungraded class, you would all do that, that it would be very unlikely to get used if there was a report card that was a self-assessment unless it was mandatory. Now, I think the interesting thing is, my understanding is that when we've been talking about mandatory versus voluntary, it's all been with respect to the registrar level, not with respect to registrant, so that a registrant within a TLD that was certified would be required. But there was concerns, again, with the self-assessment side.
If I could just interject there for a second, John, and I think that's a very good point, and it's very unfortunate that we do not have Evan on today's call, because I know he's probably one of the more passionate and articulate people regarding the pass down requirements or flow down requirements of binding registrants. So again, Andy, perhaps you could. I know you've had some discussions with Evan on this. Would you be able to perhaps address that concern, or perhaps maybe we could flesh this out in our next snapshot to more properly address the concerns of the IPC? So I think it would be mandatory. I think that's the whole idea, is to have that the mandatory requirements flow down to the registrants. But as far as a verification, I don't know if that would be part of the verification. I'll let you sort of summarize the discussions you've had with Evan on this finer point.
Sure. Actually, this is a great point you're raising. So in regard to sort of the mandatory and voluntary question that we had on the agenda today, and that sort of keeps rearing its ugly head, and we have group consensus, we just sort of need to memorialize it. That larger question was more about the entire program in general. So in other words, would all TLDs have to, you know, achieve some level of this certification, or just TLDs that were interested? So it's at a program level. When you get down to, is it mandatory or voluntary for a TLD, for instance, that elected to undertake the HSTLD program? So let's take the assumption that it's a voluntary program. I think that's what it's going to be, and that's, I think, what everybody wants it to be. But let's also take the assumption that there's a TLD all of a sudden that wants to be an HSTLD. The differences would be, this is where there's a difference between a certification model and a potential difference between the certification model and the report card model. Presumably in the certification model, most if not all of the controls that we've been talking about in the control worksheet would need to be accomplished to become certified. So by virtue of the fact that a TLD would want to become certified, the controls would then become mandatory to become certified if we had only one level of certification. So it's sort of a passed-down requirement to become certified. So that's one frame to look at. The assumptions there, again, are that there's a TLD that wants to be HSTLD. That's one assumption. The second assumption is that it's a certification program. And then the third assumption is that the certification program only had one level, so it's binary. You're either certified or not. In that case, whatever controls we have would have to be followed, or else you couldn't become certified. So in a sense, all of the controls become mandatory for the TLDs that want to become an HSTLD TLD. The variations on that model would be if we elected maybe more than one level of certification. So maybe one level would be the gold standard, one level would be the silver standard, you know, however you wanted to split it. But there could be levels of certification that could be envisioned. That becomes very tricky to maintain and difficult for the consumer to understand. But not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, that may be the way that we would want to reflect the program. The second possibility is the report card possibility. The interesting thing about the report card possibility is that it provides at the level of mandatory control, so at the question of mandatory control level, it provides a little bit more flexibility. So you can envision a report card of all of the controls that we have that we've been talking about in the control draft worksheet. And each control in the report card concept had a clear, a red, a yellow, a partial green, and a full green possibility. So that would be your grade, if you will, on that particular control. So it's possible to have either a clear or unreported control, a red, which would have been a control failure, that's the bad thing, a yellow, in which a TLD is self-certifying that they have a control in place, a partial green, in which the TLD has had an independent third party take a point-in-time review of that control and attest that it's in place. So there'd be a report that the TLD would have to produce to substantiate that assertion. And then the full green, which is similar to the partial green, is that a TLD had an independent and qualified third party come in and measure that a control exists for a period of time. So again, there'd need to be sort of an audit or some type of report to accompany that assertion. The interesting thing is that model gives a little bit more flexibility because you can envision that a TLD may not want to undertake the registrant level controls, right? Now, I think that raises some questions of the quality of the program. You know, in a purely functioning high security program, you'd probably want to see as many, if not all, the controls functioning as possible. so that you'd have a chain of good control all the way to the consumer. But that's a way to look at sort of the models and how they impact what controls at a control level would be mandatory versus voluntary. And I hope that helped clarify it a little bit.
So, John, did that help?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are certain interestingly, there are certain controls that I think are lend themselves more to a rating and certain other controls that I believe everybody would say ought to be sort of a mandatory part of being considered a high security zone, TLD. But so I guess we can just kind of cross that bridge later on in the agenda. I think I would only mention one other point with respect to the comments, which kind of goes hand in hand with the consideration of sort of a report card versus certification mark. And there was some discussion at INTA's subcommittee looking at this about how would this be rolled out to consumers. It would be very important for it to be a very clear and identifiable mark, shall we say, whether it's a report card type mark, a color, that if we kind of had a grade, say, you know, at, that a high security zone had achieved a 79, most consumers wouldn't be able to really distinguish that as to whether it was then a safe zone to, you know, respond to an email in. So that was, I thought it was an interesting comment raised by one of the other individuals.
This is Lynn. I can't imagine being a TLD owner and wanting to put anything publicly visible other than a solid green. So, I mean, in making the whole concept appealing to and going on the premise that it will be voluntary, I think there's a lot of problems with a report card approach, you know, aside from the ones we've discussed previously.
Lastly, to throw, I think last important thing to mention to throw into the mandatory versus voluntary mix is that INTA felt that there should be certain circumstances where mandatory for a registrar ought to be required. For instance, if you're trying to be the registry for .kids or .bank, there might be such clear examples of security implications that if part of the application process, in other words, if it's not mandatory that there's certain points given to, there's two competing people trying to register .kids, that the one that was going to provide a higher level of security for that zone should be given priority over it. So that's, I think, summarizes the comments.
Okay, so just to follow up and on that last point there, and Lynn, I'll come back to summarize one of your points as well. So, John, from what I heard, you were saying that in connection, I think, with if there were competing .kids and .banks, someone that would voluntarily subscribe to this higher security zone should somehow be given a preference. Is that an accurate? Because and the reason I just want to say this is this is somewhat consistent with the comments that were submitted by the Coalition for Online Accountability that talked about a preference or a point system should such requirements or incentive not be provided. Hold on, I'll find the exact quote there. But is that what you're saying? I just want to make sure I heard you right.
That's right. We thought that to encourage adoption, that would be a good idea.
Okay, so it's kind of like a carrot approach there.
Right.
Yes. Okay, and again, just looking at the Coalition for Online Accountability, why are this is their second bullet point? Why are new GTLD applicants not required to meet the stronger standards? And again, they're talking more mandatory as opposed to voluntary, but it says, or at least provide some strong incentives to do so, such as a point credit in the evaluation process. So that does seem to be a common thread between both of your concerns there, or both of your points. Appreciate that. Lynn, going back to some of your concerns regarding the report card. So you were saying basically that a report card in which you would only see value in a report card that actually gave only greens, meaning that it was.
I think in our last call we had summarized like the other approach of showing that a TLD has met a criteria that we've agreed on for high security. Another, I think, wrinkle in the problem of a report card or showing like a green, yellow, or some kind of color status is that to the typical user who is not familiar with security, they're not going to appreciate that there is no such thing as bulletproof security. There is no zero risk, and high security doesn't mean that it's impossible for something to go wrong. I think security professionals understand that, but to the general public, they're not going to appreciate that. And the fact is that somebody can do a very good job on all the controls and still suffer some type of breach. And for example, through social engineering, through an insider kind of compromise, there's a number of ways that, you cannot guarantee to people that it is totally secure. I don't think that total security exists. And so, I think this is a complication because what I'm trying to say is there is no 100%. And it's all relative. And the concept of high security is really saying that, it's above average security and that people who have implemented high security are going above minimum accepted standards. That's how I feel like it should be approached. And okay. And if I were the owner of a TLD, or if I was advising a TLD, I would not want to publicly publish strengths and weaknesses in any kind of itemized fashion.
Okay,
so Mark, then can I get the floor?
Yeah, please go ahead, Andy. Not a problem. Lynn,
hey,
I have
Lynn.
Two follow-up points after Andy. After Andy's done, go ahead, Andy. You have the floor.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, Lynn. So, you're more in favor of just a binary, more like certified or not, which would encompass all of the controls or a portion of the agreed upon portion of the controls.
Yes, and I think this is where the concept we had discussed would be that the criteria can be published. But then you would want it privately discussed whether or not a TLD has met the criteria, and it's like a pass fail. They either meet it or they don't.
The more certified, more of that certification.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, not to be too repetitive, but I think it's important not to subtly mislead people into thinking that high security means that there's absolutely no security vulnerabilities at all.
Totally agree with that one, by the way, yeah. Okay, I'm releasing the floor, Mike. Thanks.
All right, thanks. So again, Lynn, just to follow up. So if you had to choose between, and this is a question I'm trying to drill down on. So if you had to choose between a process that was pass-fail versus here are the criteria and here are some people that have tried to, do a lot of the things but didn't meet all of them to get a pass to get a passing grade. You just want that binary pass value. You don't find any value in the incremental approach. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, the incremental approach is always valuable internally, you know, within an organization. I guess what I have heartache over is the idea of that type of granularity being public. Within an organization, I think in order to, manage their security program, it's important to have that granularity. So you're going to want people to know that internally, and to have some kind of benchmark would be useful. But I think the distinction I'm making is whether or not that kind of detailed information is put out there publicly. And for the purposes of what we've been discussing, you know, a voluntary program where a TLB could, differentiate itself by saying we have a higher level of security, I think that just having some simple, icon, again, on the pass-fail concept would differentiate it, and I think it would be appealing so that different sectors and the Internet who are motivated based on market demands and consumer expectations would be motivated to have that differentiation.
I appreciate this. And again, just so that we're, as Evan said, the need to take detailed notes. So in your view, you're leaning more towards the certification. How would people be aware of this? So is this a seal that would appear on the registry website, on the individual websites within that TLD? Could you perhaps elaborate on how you see your certification plan potentially being implemented? Because and the reason I ask this is on next week, just for everybody's reminder, next week we have a double call. We have the 1 hour pre-technical call, and then we have our normal call. With regard to some of these certification questions, I think we may need to start deep diving on some of the more, legal and other complex policy issues. So I just need to, from a time management standpoint, I just want to be able to make sure that these are accounted for during the second/normal call. So, thanks.
Did I understand correctly from the original plan documents that the intention is that there would be a third party who would manage this HSTLD program? Is that the intention, rather than ICANN itself? Did I misunderstand that?
Well, Andy, since you authored the original document and you and I have had some discussion on this in the past, perhaps you could talk to that point.
Sure. So, Lynn, I don't know if that decision's been made yet, but I can sort of say that in my discussions with ICANN staff, there's a strong desire to have another entity do this. In other words, there's a strong desire, I think, for ICANN to sort of help create the program and work with the community to, create and manage the standards and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know that they want to be in the business of executing the program. So not that they've identified an entity or an organization to take it on, but, there's a desire to sort of move that.
That was the impression I had, is that was what was desired. And so with that in mind, if we have a third party who has bid and taken on a contract to provide this service, then what I would envision is that a TLD who wants to have this type of high security mark or seal would submit benchmarking data to this group who would review it, and they would either earn the seal or not. If they didn't, they would get feedback on what they need to remediate or work on. And then when they earn the seal, what I was picturing in my mind, just based on past experience of seeing on the internet different kinds of seals, is that typically an icon is the easiest way to be there and to differentiate and show that, okay, they have this seal of high security. And, you know, it's not difficult to set up detailed information on a website that gives more information about that seal. But people can immediately recognize a visual icon showing that this TLD has a higher level of security.
Hey, Michael, this is John McElwain. I'd like to chime in on that point because I totally agree with an icon. And one thing that we talked about in the Inta calls was, is there any way, and I think we've actually talked about on this call, that we can build that into the browser. And I don't know if we need to, you know, bring in somebody from Microsoft, Google, Firefox, whatever. But is there any way that your mother would what could we do or suggest? I don't know if we have to go into excruciating detail as part of this committee, but what can we suggest be integrated into the user experience that would clearly communicate that somebody was a website located within a high security zone, TLD.
This is Joe. Can I go ahead and get in the queue here at some point?
Who wants to get? Let me start building the queue here. So who was that just spoke?
This is Joe.
Joe. Okay.
Joe's answering.
And then
Brian Cute.
Brian Cute, okay, and then I have a point, but I will let the individual members. Joe, you have the floor.
You know, my concern is that without specifics, if we just have this sort of iconic or badging program, it really becomes difficult for users to make an informed assessment of the relative merits of various TLDs. All they go ahead and get is very granular binary value, yes, no, pass, fail. And, you know, I think that also sort of discourages sites from striving to improve their security continuously. So if it's a situation where once having gone ahead and achieved this badge, all they get is the badge, and the badge never really provides any sort of more granular metric, you know, that really kind of does a disservice, I think, to the bottom line goal. And it also goes ahead and is the thing that, you know, I don't think users are really going to go ahead and check, quite frankly. When they go ahead and purchase domains, they often don't refer to the underlying TLD website. They go ahead and they'll purchase it from a reseller, and the reseller may go ahead and not have the ability to go ahead and really convey useful information to them. So, yeah, it just seems to me like this is sort of a bad distinction to make. We want to provide as much information as possible to users. And, you know, frankly, when it comes to things like doing browser-based information display, I see users not even getting sort of the extended validation certificate model. So I'm not sure how much more information they're going to be able to process or recognize or work with there. So I would prefer to see as much detail as possible, but probably in some fashion other than just a badge or a medallion.
Okay. Joe, very... very good comments. I appreciate that. Brian, you're up.
Okay, thanks. And I know we've been talking about the report card and certification program, but I do want to jump over back to the controls that we've been building. Two main points, and Andy, I touched on them a little bit last week on the first call, but I think this is critical in terms of getting this thing evolved to some kind of a final state. The first kind of category of concern is that where any of the principles, criteria, or controls would put a registry in a position of validating a process or a control that is otherwise within the legal or operational purview of a registrar today. I feel very strongly that we need to identify those where they occur. It does open, as we've discussed earlier in the process here, possible liabilities for registries, if they touch on what are a registrar processes or touch the registrant in a way that might create liabilities vis-a-vis the registrant or the relationship between the registrar and registrant. So I think those things need to be flagged clearly. And the other important part of that, too, is that there is a process on vertical integration that's ongoing right now. There is a strong possibility that in the new round you will see instances of a vertically integrated registry and registrar. And to some degree, we could assume that there's ownership and control of a registrar by the registry, that that would mitigate the problems I just pointed to. However, even if that's the case, the reality is going to be in the market, you will still continue to have standalone registries who use registrars on a contracted basis. So whatever we put forward has to contemplate those models. And therefore, in that respect, we can't just build a one-size-fits-all solution. That's the first. So I think, you know, identifying those areas, calling them out, flagging them, so that we can then get to discussions about legal liabilities and the rest of it is important. The second bucket of concern, which is the one I touched on last week, Andy, and I'd love, I'm sorry, you know, I was on the first call only, but would love more input from you or reaction, is from the auditing standpoint. And again, as a company who undergoes regular audits, looking at the principles, the criteria and controls, you know, the high level questions are there other existing global standards out there that cover some of these proposed principles, criteria and controls? I know we've discussed that, certainly SysTrust, ISO 27002, there's a number out there that covers some of these proposed controls, but not all. So the assumption is we are creating something new that will need to be global standards-based, that will need to be auditable. And then the follow-on question to that, which I know this is chapter and verse for you, Andy, but is the auditor going to be auditing at the principles level, you know, at the criteria level? That makes a difference. And then lastly, in this bucket of concerns, is looking at the drafts of principles, criteria, and controls. Are they drafted tightly enough? Is there any issue of overbreadth in some of the drafting so that an auditor can give a pretty concrete, non-subjective, objective audit of the principles or criteria in question? That was a mouthful. Sorry about that.
So, Andy, do you want to take that bit by bit, or get back to?
Let me try to get the points, because there were a lot of them, and I'm trying to write them down, but I may have missed a few. With respect to sort of the other sources of controls, I built, when we were originally building the control matrix that's up on the wiki, I drew from another. Of a large bucket of sources, and that there's a column in there that traces back to where the control originated from, if at all. The controls that in that column have an NA in it means not available, and I couldn't come up with a good international standard or even local standard that would provide that control. So those are the unique controls. So that's correct. There are some controls, I believe, that are new. From an auditing perspective, I believe the auditor would really want to look at the illustrative control examples. So what activities are actually being accomplished? I have a new revision of the control criteria that I'm trying to publish. I'm working on it right now, actually. And it breaks down sort of the control activities for what you might see. They're sort of illustrative examples. Obviously, a registry, registrar, and registrant group could select different but compatible or equivalent controls. But I believe that, you know, that to perform a successful audit, you'd have to look and make sure that those controls were in existence and operating either for the period or for the point in time. I know there's some other comments, but I missed it. I've only got one hand to write today. I've got a
yes. No. The last important one was the whether any of the drafted controls or criteria were overbroad in any way, really carefully scrutinizing them to make sure that they're not overbroad, tightly written enough so that the auditor can conduct an objective and standards-based review?
You know, that's a great question. I'm looking at the criteria, we call it control criteria, and I think those need to be tightened up a bit. So that's one effort that needs to occur and is occurring. And in addition, while we're doing the more technical call, the next one is next week, an hour prior to our regular call. That's a great guiding sort of principle, I think, for that group to have in the back of its mind. You know, is the control overreaching? Is it not overreaching? Is it, you know, appropriately framed? I think those are good questions for that more technical call. Great point. I'm a little biased in my opinion about the controls now because I helped draft the original drafts, but obviously open to any input on them.
Okay, Andy, one of the questions, and I'd just like to pose this to the group here. I participate in another group, which is the Vertical Integration Working Group, and some of the comments that I've received from group members in that group have talked about the implementation or viability of my proposal. And I think that's a good reminder, because when you go back to our goal statement, we talk about the word was viability of this program. And the reason I want to try to focus on that language is based upon just some of the comments by Lynn, as well as from John, about the desire for a seal or a cert or some other thing like that, and how this would be potentially built into browsers. And so here's the idea I just like to float out there for consideration. Would it not be constructive for this group almost to have ICANN issue an RFI, a request for information, from people that would potentially be willing to provide this service? Because, again, Andy, you had said that ICANN staff has indicated that they would like this outsourced. If Kirk could put that in his letter, as well as with the expedited time frame when he provides that to the group, that would be great. But if ICANN wants to outsource this and there's no one that could do it, and we create a program, it then makes ICANN the de facto, it then becomes, you know, the unwilling adoptive parent of a program that the market did not, if you will, the free market didn't support. So I think before we create something, we should perhaps issue an RFI, and perhaps this RFI could be broad in the concept of not only aimed at potential certification programs, but also maybe we could solicit input and feedback from, you know, the Googles, the Microsofts, Firefoxes of the world that do support the browsers that might have some type of verification built into the browser, so that by getting these data points, you know, again, we, you know, one of the things the affirmation of commitments requires is us to do fact-based decision-making policy development process. So I think this is something that we really need to get these factual data points in, and I just put that out there. I mean, is it a good idea, or, you know, Mike, it's a really bad idea? I'm open to suggestions. Lynn and John, I mean, I came up with this idea after, you know, your comments and suggestions. I mean, do you think this is a good idea or a bad idea?
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I do too. This is Lynn. I think having an RFI go out, you know, before everything is finalized by this group would just be an excellent action.
Hey, Mike, right. It's Andy. In the queue?
Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
I just have two quick concerns. The first one is I think that's ICANN's direction. We should probably maybe formally ask it. I'm not technically ICANN staff, so hopefully I didn't misrepresent. I mean, that's just my understanding. So everyone, please appreciate. I could be wrong on that. Second, I like the RFI idea. The only concern I have is that, you know, as a guy that does a lot of responses myself to client requests, I don't know. I'm not sure how the RFI would be formed, because one of the key things, you know, when signing up for anything, you want to make sure you tightly define the scope of what you're signing up for. And it seems to me that we need to define a little bit of that first so that an organization that was interested would have enough data to be comfortable that they could provide the service, right?
Okay, I'll let Andy finish, and then Lynn, you're first in the queue, and then I'll go behind. I'll be next. So, Andy, do you want to finish that thought before Lynn?
That's probably enough. I'm just concerned that we need to have enough material to be able to say, you know, very specifically, this is what we're asking the responders to do. You know, things like, is it voluntary or mandatory, or is it a report card, and specifically how does that work? Is it a, you know, is it a certification program? How does that work? What are the controls? I think those are very important scoping questions for an RFI responder.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that, that to do an RFI, you have to have things fairly well defined. And I think there is a way, though, I mean, that's the point of a RFI versus a RFP, that the RFI gives some room for the responders to contribute suggestions and ideas that would improve it. So I think a RFI would be valuable.
Excellent. And I think, John, you also wanted to speak on this, or you were just fine saying broadly supporting this concept, correct?
Broadly supporting it. Yeah, no, that's good.
Okay. And again, Andy, perhaps the reason I just threw this out there for consideration is I agree. If we would have done this earlier in the process or the RFI, we really didn't have any framework. So some of the excellent heavy lifting that you've done in framing out some of the control elements, as well as us, if you will, deep diving on some of the nuances of, say, a cert versus a report card program, may be able to provide a framework for that regarding the RFI. And again, you know, I appreciate you're just a consultant and really appreciate the great job you've done, but this really just does go to stress the point to ICANN staff that we, the working group, need to know what its intentions are, because if they will not provide clear guidance to us, it really makes our job very difficult. So if this is something that they want from a timeline standpoint and that they want to outsource, we need to know this. And it would really help to have it in writing as opposed to secondhand accounts or interpretations.
Well, in the this is Lynn. The reason I had the impression that that's what they wanted to do, I'm on my BlackBerry today, so I don't have my computer in front of me, but in the initial documents that were published, you know, for the call for people to be in this group, there is a few sentences stating that that was their plan or intention, that they did not want to manage it in-house. So maybe if somebody has those documents in front of them, they can refer to that.
I'm madly trying to bring them up, Lynn. Sandy, I probably won't be able. I've just got too much information. We've got 2 minutes left.
Yeah, I know that it, you know, there's at least a few written sentences stating that.
And actually, Lynn, this is Andy. That's where I'm getting my my knowledge from as well. You know that and those sentences were written by me, I believe. Yeah. So yeah. So that's where I'm getting, you know, ICANN's intent from. But I apologize. I just can't. I think it's in the original verification.
Andy, can I get in the queue? This is Dave Piscatello.
Dave, go hop in.
Sure. So 2 points. One. I believe an accurate description of what ICANN's position would be, and again, I'm not senior management, but you know, from my understanding as support, our position has always been that that this is not something that ICANN staff would be prepared to do and undertake on our own, and we certainly believe that there are probably existing more qualified people to do. Do auditing than what we have on our staff. I think that's that's not one of our core competencies. If the community turned around and said, you know, ICANN, we want you to do this, go out and build it, then I imagine that, that senior management would take the direction from the community and do that. The other point, I just want to get a clarification for Mike. Between asking ICANN staff in a sort of generic sense for something and asking ICANN senior management, you've asked for a couple of things that are honestly outside of what Andy and I can give you, and what we can pass along the information, but it might be better as a chairperson for you to contact senior management, and in particular Kurt directly, to get some of the things that you've asked for. To be honest with you, as an example, I have no idea what this letter from Paul Toomey is, and you've mentioned it several times over several months, and I don't know where to go and get that. And I'm just being honest with you. I think a call to Kurt, who has that context and history, would be a faster track to getting the information that you want the committee to see than trying to have Andy and I run around through the dungeons and look for it.
And Dave, let me say I appreciate that, and that's probably what I will do next. And with regard to the request that I have asked you to do, I appreciate the timeliness in which you've responded. I think with some of the original documentation, some of the sources with the ESSAC reports, individually, as well as sort of wearing my co-chair hat, I have nothing but the highest regard for the quality of support that both you and Andy have provided. No complaints there. I know you and I, we've perhaps maybe flamed a little email back and forth, but as far as the quality of work and support, no complaints. And as I said, I do think this is an issue from a broader process standpoint of ICANN's commitment to the bottom-up consensus process, where we do need some directed response from people higher up the pay grade scale. So I just want to make that statement in my own individual capacity as to I have no complaints whatsoever with the support that you and Andy have given this working group. Again, I think Andy has carried. I think we are where we are at today in large part due to a lot of the heavy lifting he has done, as well as the feedback of the individual members in getting us to where we're at. So it's all about getting us across the finish line, and I do think some people up higher up the food chain need to step to the plate and help us do our job. So,
yeah, and this is Dave again. It's just I have no problem or no issue with it, with anything you're asking me to do. I'm expressing sort of a frustration that there are some things that I can't get you, and and just trying to as you say, try to get us across the across the finish line. So, I'm glad you take it constructively, and I've taken, most of what we've tried to do over the past several months, as part of the process, and, you just put on your thick skin and you go, so.
Yeah, it is a noisy process, as we both know, but, again, I respect, have some differences of opinion, but, respect your contributions and your role in making this process go forward. So, again, I appreciate that. Okay, so we're at the end of our call here. Unfortunately, we did not get to some of the technical substance, but then again, that's now that we have our pre-hour technical call. Hopefully, we'll be able to make up some of that lost technical ground next week. And, again, I will work on getting out some correspondence to ICANN staff, which I will circulate to the entire team to make sure that there is consensus on the group regarding the nature of the request. So, again, thank you, everyone, and look forward to the two-hour call next week.
I have one request, please. This is Dave Piscatello. I really would like to see us continue the discussion about the RFI on the mailing list. And part of the reason why, quite honestly, is that when we do something on the mailing list, I have something to cut and paste and present to other members of ICANN, in particular senior staff. just honestly, they don't have the bandwidth to listen to the MP3 recordings of these to understand, you know, the threads that we've gone through. And I think there's been a lot of value in what's been discussed and presented today. So I don't want to put a lot of more burden on the volunteers, because I know you're all sucked for bandwidth as everyone else in your real job. But if you could articulate some of the things that you think might be incorporated into the RFI, at least gives me and Andy some basis on which to go and further discuss it internally, and I'd really appreciate that.
I put it this way, Dave, I will have an RFI summary to the mailing list hopefully within the next 90 minutes. All right?
Okay.
One last point, and that is the early technical call. Keep in mind that starts at 6:30 for those of us on the left coast, so just a thought about that. A later time might be better to encourage participation.
Next week.
Part of the day, Joe.
But I think, Joe, next week the call is not a morning call. We were very sensitive to our West Coast participants, so that is actually 5 p.m. East Coast, so that would be it goes 4 to 6 East Coast, which would be 1 to, what is it? It's an afternoon time. So we did that to be somewhat sensitive to Andy, since he's the main support person, and not requiring to get him up any earlier.
Nope,
okay?
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy. Bye.
Okay.
Thanks again, everyone.
Bye now.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye. Now.